Hi, friends. Owen Locke and Rick Talley here from Locke & Company Distilling.
First off, we'd like to thank Sam and Jay at the Unfiltered Podcast for all they do in our industry, community, and more importantly, it's just good to work with great guys like them. Owen and I are Colorado natives. We've spent more than a decade perfecting our Aspen-aged rye whiskey, and we think it's well worth the wait. Rye whiskey usually isn't for the faint of heart, but we have to say this is hands down some of the smoothest rye on the market.
That comes from our 95% rye, 5% barley mash bill, and our unique aging process. We age our whiskey in smaller 30-gallon barrels for a minimum of 2 years, and then we finish the rye by adding hand-cut and hand-charred aspen discs harvested from our family property outside of Fairplay, Colorado. This artisanal process produces an extremely smooth rye with notes of light brown sugar, cinnamon, to balance the spiciness of the rye grain, truly delivering a taste like none other.
So, if you enjoy gold medal winning spirits, want to support small business, and need a gift for the holidays or for yourself, please consider making Locke & Co. Aspen Aged Rye Whiskey your next purchase.
You can find our Aspen Aged Rye Whiskey at many bars and restaurants and most liquor stores on the Front Range and throughout Colorado. Check us out at lockandcodistilling.com. That's L-O-C-K-E at lockandcodistilling.com. Cheers from Rick and Owen.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Unfiltered. I am co-host Dr. Samuel J. coming at you today from my home, if you can't tell by the panting pug and the screaming baby. On today's episode, Jay and I got on the horn with Carmen and Duncan McFarlane, who are the two of the co-founders of Phoenix Brewing Company out of Mansfield, Ohio. Shout out to Laura Bruns, who set up this interview and helped us get it done. Really, really interesting story. They've been around for several years now. Little piece of trivia or kind of a fun fact is that Phoenix Brewing Company is actually housed in an old funeral home. So we get into that. We get into their story. We get into a lot more stuff. It was a great interview. Had a lot of fun talking to Duncan and to Carmen. And we hope you'll enjoy it. As always, thank you for the support. Make sure you're participating in 30 Days of Craft and all of that fun stuff. And have a fantastic day. Just don't tell them that you know me. Shake it, shake it, sugary. Without a Big Ten title game to watch, you'll be just fine.
I have lots of open time this weekend now.
Exactly. All right. Jay Schrader, we're going to introduce our folks from Phoenix Brewing Company in Mansfield, Ohio here in just a second. But as always, follow us on the Facebook, on the Twitter, and on the Instagram, Unfiltered Craft. That's where we are. To our Patreon subscribers, thank you so much. Patreon.com/unfilteredcraft. Jay, I'm probably going to put these two on the spot, but we are blowing up the 30 Days of Craftsmas, by the way. We are now 8 days in to 30 Days of Craftsmas, which basically means that people across the country, what we want you to do is go into your craft brewery, craft distillery. If you buy a beer or buy a drink, take a picture of yourself doing it. Actually, just you can go to the liquor store and do it. Go to the grocery store. As long as it's craft, take a picture of yourself. Hashtag 30 Days of Craftsmas. Mention us. Mention whoever you buy it from and post it. 1 point for everybody who does that. If you go into the place, if you go into Phoenix Brewing Company and you buy a crowler or a six pack, get a picture of these two who are at the bottom of the screen. We're going to give you 10 points. We're already up to it.
Get a picture of that beard.
I know. Yes, exactly. We've got three people who already have, I want to say 100 points.
Beard.
Jay, you have no idea. The prizes that we have are crazy. We have 15 sponsors already. We've got, I just counted it, 32 six packs of beer already. So,
and I have been out twice.
I know.
I've been out twice and didn't post anything myself.
No.
So,
no, you got to do it. You got to do it. It's
that
crazy.
Sucks.
Topping Goliath in Iowa just threw some beer at us. Big Grove in Iowa. Maybe these two right here will throw some beer and say, yes, we're gonna do it. So it's crazy. It's awesome. Our friends in Pennsylvania.
Put you on the spot.
Yeah. Well, our friends in Pennsylvania, I can't think of who they are now. I'll figure it out. But We've done it. So basically, end of the month, as many points you can get, we will ship you as much beer and as much swag, merchandise as we can. So 30 days of Christmas, figure it out. You'll do it. With that said, Jay Schrader, who is under the – he's the animal underneath the stairs. We are Harry so Potter. Honored. Yeah, we're so honored today to have you two folks from Phoenix Brewing Company in Mansfield, Ohio. So with that said, we introduce yourselves.
Well, I'm the bearded one, the gray bearded one. I'm Duncan, and I am the head brewer of Phoenix Brewing Company. And we're ownership too, so we're part of the ownership.
So, yep. Man of many words.
That makes the gray hair come out.
Yeah. And who is your better half?
And my wife, Carmen.
I'm also known as Red Around the Brewery. But yeah, I do creative and marketing, and this is a second career for me. So I left a 20-year career in education to go full-time into the brewing industry.
So tell us, because we usually do this, what's the address? Because we have people who knows where they listen from. So what's the address, and how do we find you physically?
We're at 131 North Diamond Street in Mansfield, Ohio. 5 minutes from the highway, right downtown in the heart of Mansfield.
And let's just jump right into this, since you brought up the address first, Sam. Something special about this brewery and the building that it's in. Not only is it a gorgeous building, but I don't know, who wants to enlighten us a little bit about the history of 131?
Yes.
Because damn.
All right, you do know
a little bit. I do, yeah. So our building was built in 1914, and it was built by the Schrader family, and it is a former mortuary and funeral home. Okay. It closed down in 1935. There's a little bit of a history about why it closed, but then...
Wait, whoa. What's the history?
Exactly.
Hold on. Holy Santa Claus shit. Go. Okay.
We have to back up just a little bit, because the building itself was built in 1914, and the buildings next to us were the Schrader Family Furniture Factory. And it was really common at the time that if you built furniture or cabinets, you also built caskets for your community. So, this was a natural progression of their family business. And in 1932, Charles Schrader Jr. was in a lot of pain. He had a terminal illness, and he committed suicide in the building. Closed the business down in 1935.
The current tap room level is where he shot himself.
Wow. Do you guys have an outline of the body or anything like that?
No,
but it was the chapel, the mortuary, where he committed suicide, which is where the tap room is. It's not in the embalming area, which is down below where the brewery is.
Or the pilot brewery is in the basement.
Right, the pilot brewery.
So our tap room is in what would have been considered the chapel. The upstairs is unfinished. There's discussions of when, not if, but when we'll be refinishing the upstairs. And that was the viewing room, and there's like a 20-foot skylight. It's actually a really cool space. And then the basement has, and the reason why we actually chose this location, one was because the building was gorgeous, but also the basement has 9-foot ceilings, and it was perfect to put in a 5-barrel system. Most of the buildings downtown had much shorter ceiling heights of like, say, 6-foot.
And dirt floors.
This was fully finished, ready to go, whereas concrete flooring, concrete walls, just a really, really great space.
What did you have to do to prepare that building for brewing? I mean,
everything.
But oddly enough, though, you had the drainage. But did you have the drainage already? Right.
They had to go through. I mean, I'll say some of it. We had to add in electricity, water, gas. None of that was here. It had to be retrenched, redrained. A lot of work just restoring the walls, getting the plaster that had been troweled on the bricks kind of taken care of, and then...
Yeah, it would have been easier to tear the thing down and build from scratch, which some sane people were like, why don't you just tear the thing down? But you know, we saw the potential of the story to tell.
Yeah.
And the way it would look, it already looked great. It was tattered, but it was, you know, it was fixable.
Yeah.
But you're right.
It had a lot of potential.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous building.
What'd you find though? Like, was it, I mean, to be frank, for the last 6 years, was it worth it to go into that? Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
phone call. I'll take this.
You got it. Okay, so
I think he's just gonna go ahead and take the phone off though.
Carmen, let us ask you then. You know,
all right.
You know, he's brewing the beer.
False alarm.
But why Mansfield? Why there? Tell us the history of Mansfield and your connection to it, and also, what is beer like in Mansfield and what's it been like for the last, you know, the craft beer revolution of the last 25, 30 years?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm originally from Mansfield. Mm-hmm. There was the last brewery closed after Prohibition in 1955. There was a brew pub called Wooden Pony that was open in the 90s. A lot of cities had brew pubs in the 90s. We did as well. That closed down in 2002. But we wanted to open something up downtown. That was our first goal. I mean, that was something we were looking into, something downtown.
Yeah.
Because it's an older downtown. It's got a lot of character, but it's been through a lot of, we're an old industrial town. Mm-hmm. So it's gone through some down times in the 70s and 80s. So we want to be part of the rebuild if possible, which I think we've kind of been a catalyst toward rebuilding the downtown here, which needed, you know, an old steel town or rust belt town. Right.
Mansfield is it's halfway between two major cities. It's like the meeting point between Cleveland and Columbus, and timing was kind of just perfect for our partners and ourselves to kind of come into this and do this. When we began looking for places to go, we could have gone to the more towards the mall. We could have gone into the areas that were a little more populated, a little more retail oriented, but we really wanted to come back downtown. And the downtown area in the last 10 to 15 years has really been working on transforming and coming back to being kind of a showpiece. And it really has. We have downtown organizations like Downtown Mansfield, Inc., which are phenomenal. We have our Convention and Visitors Bureau, which really does a fantastic job of kind of talking about all the amazing parts of Mansfield, including us. They include us, which I think is kind of cool because they don't think everybody does when it comes to alcohol. Some people shy away. They have their own wine and ale trail for Richland County, Ashland County, and one more county on it. Richland and Ashland County.
Right. And I will say something real quick. The owner of our building who showed the building to us, he was 80 years old when he showed us the building with flashlights. Told us the story about what the building was. But the irony is he closed down all the bars in Mansfield back in the 80s and 90s, closed them all down, but he maintained a lot of the buildings. He bought buildings cheap, but he kept them from being torn down. So, because all the old brick buildings downtown, this one guy, you know, he owns half of downtown. Entrepreneur, whatever. But he saved a lot of these buildings. This building has been sitting empty for 85 years. He bought it.
So there's been nothing in this building since old man Schreier shot himself.
1955, before you. Business closed next door where they still made furniture and still had a showroom for furniture. This was probably a storage building. But since 1955, this is, you know, the Schreier company closed.
They might have used it for storage.
Right. Then, but it would have been torn down by any other owner. We were fortunate that it was still here. Yeah.
One of the things about Mr. Ferniak that's really amazing is that he wanted to bring Mansfield back to the Mansfield of his childhood. So he really took a lot of time trying to preserve buildings, and he's done a lot of he's made a lot of opportunities for business and individuals and businesses in Mansfield to really kind of bring it back. He's been part of the
rebuild.
He's been the major driver for rebuilding downtown.
But ironically, he closed all the bars, and then we came to him and we were basically a bar. But he thought
of awesome. Lost him, Sam?
Maybe. He'll come back. I like your basement.
Nice.
I'll take you down.
There we go. There we go. Repeat yourself, please.
There we go.
Yeah, there we go. We're back. We're back. We're back. We lost you. You're talking about old man. What's his name?
Unstable.
Oh, we had Mr. Farniak is really responsible for kind of bringing in largely he's responsible for bringing back Mansfield's downtown area. He bought up a lot of the businesses and the buildings and with the intentions of kind of bringing back the Mansfield of his childhood. And it's really kind of cool because you will see him. He will show up and just kind of go through the building and say hi and check on us, make sure everything's okay. We'll see him outside. If he sees a cigarette butt or any trash outside, he lets us know that we need to get out and clean it up, and which is awesome. I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's a really good thing that he cares that much about how everything looks and how everything is. It's
And what made him – why was he the guy that was shutting everything down in the first place, though? Like, was he trying to clean up the town, or was he a bit of a teetotaler?
He wasn't shutting it
– Well, it wasn't family-friendly downtown.
Yeah.
He put the carousel, too.
He wanted to make – he wanted to bring – Mansfield went through a really rough patch in the 70s. It earned the nickname in the late 60s and early 70s of Danger City.
Wait, why? 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 You got to tell us, Carmen. Why?
There had been a lot of department stores and a lot of other big businesses that all went to the mall. And the things that were left behind were causing a lot of crime and a lot of destruction. And he just wanted it to come back. He wanted it to come back to what it was.
He had a vision for cleaning up downtown. He put in a carousel. He put in a, what's an old school carousel?
A merry-go-round.
A merry-go-round. And he was laughed at for putting a merry-go-round downtown. But it ended up being the catalyst for growth downtown. So anyway, it's just something that happened here in this Rust Belt town that it looks a lot better than it did 20 years ago. I tell you that.
And so you guys have been part of it. You guys are part of this gentrification, this redevelopment of the downtown area, huh?
Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations. Yes. We like that kind of thing. We talk a lot about on this show, especially how breweries and brew pubs are really supposed to be like the local neighborhood spot, watering hole, community center. And sounds like you guys have had quite a bit to do with that. Does your name Phoenix have anything to do with the development or the redevelopment, or maybe turning what was once the end of life in a building that you guys were in into something different? Tell us about Phoenix.
Yeah, that's multi-dimensional. The building we're in is across the street from breweries that existed around 1900, before 1900, up until 1955, which I mentioned. So we're in the old brewing district. We happen to be in the funeral home that was across the street to a couple breweries. So Phoenix, up out of the ashes of the old brewing district, but up out of the ashes out of an old mortuary. So it's the mortuary and the old brewing district that used to be down here. And we're in that area. We're near a big spring. Across the street, there was it was the big spring in the city that was the water source for Mansfield during its start. The spring has since been abandoned, but the old brewery, Renner and Weber, which is the biggest brewery in town, during the early 1900s, sourced its brewing water from this big spring, which is literally within 100 feet of our property.
Wow.
We don't utilize it. It's all underground right now. We can't get to it, but it's still there. So it's a cool history part of the brewing area. The reason the breweries were in this area is because of the water source, right?
I should note, we did, the spring that he's talking about, we did test the water for that. It's not suitable for brewing. It has really high sodium content.
Okay.
Well, salting the streets, we do a lot of salt here to melt the snow, and apparently it's gone through the ground. And,
seeping but into we that couldn't find spring, the source. Huh?
Well, it's hard to find the source of the spring. It's all underground. So where we tested may have been, 100 feet downstream of the actual source where it comes out of the ground. So it's hard to tell. It's all concrete.
So when you opened up in 2014
and wrote, it's hard to tell where it is exactly.
Now we're cutting out. Sorry. When you guys opened up in 2014, what was going on in like in Ohio at that time? Like in terms of craft beer and all that stuff. What made you decide to do that? Do this.
Did we just cut out?
No.
Okay.
No, you're good.
The big wave.
We were the 97th brewery in Ohio.
Yeah, there was less than 100 when we opened.
There were less than 100 breweries in Ohio when we opened. We actually started up because of a mutual friend, someone that I worked with. We had been introduced, and Duncan was teaching him how to homebrew. And he kept saying, you know, I really think Mansfield needs a microbrewery. And I think it's the right time, and I think you guys should open a microbrewery. And we both kind of laughed. And Scott kept saying, I really think you guys should open a microbrewery. And then finally Scott came in one day and said, I really think we should open a microbrewery. And I found a business class. And if you guys are interested.
Yeah, because we're not like, business owners before this.
We were not, you know, he was a chemist. I was an art educator. And anyways, through a series of other individuals coming in and joining with us, we opened up, you know, basically just from that conversation, we began researching and looking. And we loved craft beer. He'd been homebrewing for 16 years at the time. And it was just something that it really was a good fit for the community and for Mansfield. And
we were younger.
We were younger.
I mean, yeah.
I was 42. Now, that's older, you know, but back then, I mean, I wouldn't do this now. Do that now? You know what I'm saying? There's a certain age.
I think you would, but I think we're both old enough now that there's a whole lot of wear and tear on your body from this. That's very different from say 7 years ago when we first started conversations.
Right. Let's not pretend though, where you guys are is not like you're not in the middle of, I don't know, Nevada, right? Where beer is, right. You know, good beer is hard to find. You're in Ohio. You're in the Midwest. You're next to Michigan and you're next to you know, Kentucky.
We're in a little vacuum in the middle of Ohio down here.
Yeah,
Like, what made you think that you two made good enough beer to do this? I didn't know.
We don't know.
Okay. We prayed a lot.
Who knows? I don't know.
But you clearly do. You clearly make good enough
beer. I had confidence, but you don't know. You just have confidence. You just do it because you think it's going to work out.
We had this, you know, we had a conversation with Scott and Mansfield, we felt was kind of ready for craft beer. We'd had a business called the Old Bag of Nails, which had great tap offerings. It was someplace that we had been, you know, they had opened up in what, 2011?
We were regulars, right.
We were regulars there. Craft beer was really popular. It was building up. And we kept saying, you know, when we would have our first couple of meetings, we met at the Old Bag of Nails and, you know, kind of looked at what they were doing and looked at what they were selling and watching people's reactions. And while we loved craft beer, and we knew a whole lot of people who loved craft beer, we were really hoping that craft beer would become a catalyst in our community and really would kind of draw a lot of people in. And it did. I should say, you know, we do have, in normal years, we have live music every weekend, which helps to bring it in. That was something that Scott was, you know, really excited about because he was excited to have a place where we could have live music come in and, you know, local musicians, not so local musicians, craft beer and
artwork on the walls.
Artwork, local artists coming in, which is really cool. So
there was some other things that we were excited about. Yeah.
Tell us about your relationship to craft beer then. Not just like the brewing part, but I mean, you just brought up, Carmen, craft beer. How did you get started into it? Like, what was the first beer that you two had separately or together that really changed everything? This wasn't a Miller Lite or a La Crosse Lite or
we're talking mid-90s, so it was Dundee's Honey Brown, or, you know, I hate to say Killian's, but that wasn't craft, but we didn't know.
I didn't know. But it just wasn't Miller Lite or Bud Light.
I definitely like different things in college, like not necessarily good, but the funny part, I go to a party, and I wouldn't take Bud Light or Miller Lite because everybody else would drink it.
Yes,
so I would take the crappiest beer I could find, and no one would touch it, and I learned from that.
Yeah.
Like if I put like Jobel or Schaefer Light in a community cooler at a party, no one's going to touch it.
You're still going to have beer to drink at the end of the night.
Right. And I knew it was mine and everybody else knew it wasn't theirs. So that's kind of a weird way to get into craft, but finding things at the end of the aisle in the 90s. You know what? Crooked River, was it Crooked River? No,
Crooked yeah,
River.
Was
well,
yeah.
That was one. That was a local. Oh, what was a Cleveland was the, brand?
Yeah.
But was
yeah.
it Red Hook? Red Hook ESB.
Red Hook ESB. Yeah.
We had some Red
that's
Hook.
A Boston beer. Yeah, that's one yeah. that actually got me involved in craft beer oh, back yeah. in the 2000s. So.
Yeah, anything that was a little maltier or had more flavor than the AB InBev beers, yeah. You know, they have the Bud Light, Miller Light, Coors Light. And there's nothing wrong with those beers. You know what? I hate to, I am really cautious about saying
situation,
anything.
Situational.
And I'll be honest. I mean, my craft beer, gateway beer was Killian's because it was a red beer and I had red hair. And yeah. it was cooler to order a red than it was to order a Bud Light or Miller Light at the bar. It looked different. You know, it was...
And one thing in Ohio, up until 2003, beer had to be 6% or less alcohol, ABV, which may not have been in every other state. So I didn't know what an IPA was because you couldn't find it here because it wasn't, you know, IPAs generally over 6. Yeah. So our local brewery, the brew pub here, everything was 6% or less. I didn't know why at the time. So they had pale ale, they had... you know, American stout, but IPA was something you couldn't even get here.
So what was the IPA then? Like what? Okay. So you're the brewer. What was your IPA?
There wasn't one that, I didn't know about the style.
No. What was your first one though? You said, oh my God,
probably Columbus Brewing.
The first pale ale. Okay. You got Sierra Nevada pale ale, which is a big one yeah. for a lot of brewers.
That's fantastic.
It's practically, I mean, it's a very hoppy pale ale.
It's an industry standard
that we could get here legally. So that's one that I would say was a go-to, the Sierra Nevada pale ale. IPA wise. Yeah.
Probably Columbus Brewing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Sierra Nevada. So if Jay and I could go back and kind of track our interviews, 200 episodes in or almost, that's, well, no, we've done 200 different breweries almost. We did some multiple. Oh. I think Sierra Nevada is up there. It's that, it's yeah. it's fat tire for people. It's
well, it's an influence for sure.
Yeah,
a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's for a lot of folks. I don't know if you've had Sierra Nevada lately. It tastes better than it did 6 months ago for some reason. I think they've kind of.
I like pretty much anything they put out. I mean, they have some fantastic beers. Mm-hmm. And they put out that hazy this summer. What was it called?
Oh, yes, they did. The Torpedo? Was it Torpedo? No.
No.
I don't think it was Torpedo.
I don't remember. But anyway, they did a hazy and in a can. Yeah, of course.
Maybe it was last year. It might have been Torpedo.
So you guys make a shitload of beer. How do you select your styles? Like, what do you, like when you're trying to make beers, what are you thinking through in terms of recipes and distribution
it's changed a lot. I mean, when we first started, there was basic styles we wanted to hit, but you're always trying to add and trying to, I don't say chase, but there's always new styles that are being brewed and you can't wait on those. If you're going to do it, make a decision early on.
Yeah,
that you're going to do it and do it right. And we do a lot of different styles. We try not to say, hey, they do great stouts, but not good IPAs. We try to do everything, which everybody, you know, there's better beer.
You know, we're like everybody else. We try to do everything that we have. We want to do it well. So sometimes some beers, you know, they're one and done. If it comes up, it's brewed. Maybe we'll try it a second time. If it doesn't have the reaction that we're hoping for, we'll take it out of the, kind of remove it from the portfolio that year. One of the things that we strive to do, because we are kind of isolated, we're, you know, you have a lot of breweries that have that, oh, they're just a hazy IPA brewery, or you have, you know, they're really, you know, huge high ABV bombs. We tried to really develop a well-rounded tap list, and we have 16 taps. And for the better part of 2 years, we've pretty much filled our taps up ourselves, except for when we're bringing in one or two beers from other Ohio places, or when we pull in an Ohio tap takeover, which we have a lot of fun with those. But we try to keep on, you know, a certain number of IPAs. We try to keep on a certain number of stouts all year long. We try to have
sours.
Belgians, a sour. We do kettle sours. We're not doing barrel sours yet. I mean, it's on the list. I mean, we got a big bucket list of beers that we'd like to do, but when we sit down and kind of map stuff out, we take a look at numbers each year. How fast did it sell? What was the feedback? Put out a community response or community survey, and then you know, sit down with a whole bunch of us and just kind of hash out our list. The beers that we do best here as far as overall highest quality are probably going to be our stouts because our water is perfect for it. But, you know, we've got pretty good following on some of our IPAs, like the Embalming Fluid, which is an Imperial IPA, and that's a name. You know.
Undertaker, yeah. Pretty good.
Undertaker, we got our notes back from GABF. We didn't win anything, but we know it was on the final table, which is really cool.
The Undertaker and the Embalming Fluid. Those are amazing. You guys, where are the shirts? You guys need shirts for that.
Yeah, no
kidding. We got shirts for everything.
Yeah, sure. Oh, we've got so many shirts. So that's part of. I like to have a lot of swags. We have a lot of swag.
I dig it. So, like, tell us what, like, the last 8 months. Obviously, you're in Ohio. You're kind of upper Midwest. Mid East Coast. What have you been dealing with in terms of shutdowns, COVID, business ownership, all that stuff? Because out here, it's obviously a different animal. But what challenges have you faced and successes have you had?
Well, I will say different packaging, you know, doing draft and then draft on site was kind of our main thing. We started getting into the canning a little over a year ago, which, you know, the timing couldn't be better because we had that other package and we had a meeting like, let's do more canning. We started doing canning 4-packs. And when, you know, when restaurants stop ordering kegs and your tap rooms closed, there's not many other options. If for many breweries, there wasn't an option. I'm not sure many will survive, but we have done carry out very well, home delivery very well. And we've increased our production toward our canning just because it made sense to, and it's worked out pretty well.
Do you have like an in-house canning line?
We do the mobile canner that comes on site. Yeah. For now, which is, it's saved us.
It's been pretty phenomenal. We've been very thankful for that. We do have a canning line. It's just not here yet. It's supposed to be here. It was supposed to be here already, but it's like everything else. It's delayed with COVID.
But it's not.
So
it was supposed to be there, but it's not. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just keep filling up those coffee pots and Home Depot buckets whenever you can, I suppose, when you're out of cans. That's what we're seeing a little bit of that out here.
We had a crowler. We ordered a crowler the year before.
Yeah.
And we were really lucky because I had just ordered 2 pallets of cans when the first shutdown in Ohio happened in March. And, you know, everybody was backed up with all kinds of extra alcohol, extra beer, you know, been ramping up production for local places, getting deliveries ready to go. And then all of a sudden, you know, our governor announces a shutdown of the entire state 2 days before St. Patrick's Day. And you're starting to package up as many of your beers and crowlers for people to take home and do their own thing.
If you had the Seamer.
If you had it. And if you get the cans. It worked out well, yeah. We had cans and we were really lucky because we survived our shutdown with those 2 pallets. That's what, like 3,000 cans? Mm-hmm. 2,600, 3,000.
Duncan, you alluded to a lot of breweries maybe not making it. I mean, we've seen quite a few out here that have pulled the plug and may not ever return. And our local newspaper's actually got a kind of a running death list that totals restaurants, breweries, and other, you know, craft type establishments that have gone under altogether. What have you guys seen in and around Mansfield in terms of breweries shutting down? I mean, what's your best estimate in terms of percentage that'll survive out there?
Yeah, it's hard to say right now. We've heard of a few here or there. Think it's hitting here hard right now, harder than it has in the last, since it started. We know more people that have had it or sick or haven't made it through. And I think it's just hitting here very hard right now. And I don't say I worry about other breweries. I worry about restaurants, bars, regular bars, that whole sector. So, yeah, I know breweries have an edge over bars because they have a product they manufacture.
Yeah.
Same with restaurants. They make food, they can deliver it to get through. You know, there's some regular bars that buy and sell and don't make anything. We'll see. You know, I guess we'll just see how it is and how much you can pivot from what you normally do to something else that'll get you through it.
What kind of conversations are you two having at night when you're stressed out? You know, to be as frank and unfiltered, if you will, as possible. I mean,
well, if I haven't had too many bourbons.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be tough, though, right? I mean, you guys are in this together. You're in this together. I mean, it's got to be, are you wetting it? It's got to be stressful, right?
I think some days are stressful. I think other days are, you know, I just need to get this done. Just
right. One thing at a time type stuff. Yeah.
To be honest, when we're at work, we don't actually see each other that often.
Yeah. So you try to work 20 hours a day.
I'm pretending to clean tanks or something.
It is something where we have different areas that we work in, different parts of it. We have, one of the things we have is we have our tap room and then we have our basement brewery. We also have a production facility next door. And my office is over in the production facility. So I'm kind of holed up in my space most of the day, or I work from home, which is nice.
How many people have you guys managed to keep on the payroll throughout all this? I mean, it sounds like your facility is a lot bigger than maybe the website alludes to.
We have
six
full-time staff members and 11 part-time staff members. And
we haven't seen them in a couple months. I mean,
most of
our part-timers
1st.
Have other jobs. Thankfully they have their full-time job, and most of our part-time staff, it's a second job.
They call it their it's funny because they all call it their hobby job, and they come in
beer money job.
It's their beer money job. They work here, you know, because they like the people, they like the brewery, they like the environment, they like the beer discount.
Except for us. We don't have that luxury.
We're here. I mean, we have to be here, but I mean, we love it. Mm-hmm. It's still fun. I mean, I think if you can still say that your job is fun and that you enjoy it, I think that's really important.
What has changed, you know, as we kind of close up shop here, what has changed December 2019 to December 2020 in terms of how you view this business? As frank as you want to be.
Yeah. We're nervous.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
I'm confident.
I mean, we're not nervous about surviving. I mean, we're lucky that one of our business partners, Steve, is our financial officer, and he's very conscientious, and he's very careful with monies. He's very conservative, and that's a good thing. I mean, we're not out just, you know, taking loan after loan after loan after loan for stuff. I mean, when we opened, we had two five-barrel fermenters and a five-barrel brew house. And that was we had to have two more fermenters in the next month and a half. And, you know, most of what we've done, we've tried to be very cautious with how we've purchased and purchase as we need it, not with the expectation that we're going to buy it and grow into it. We've been very conscientious about how we do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important for a lot of breweries, and those breweries that are just kind of throwing money did, I think they're going to struggle in these next couple of months. I mean, we're looking at, you know, what do we do to kind of transition to more online? What do we do to transition to more carry out? How do we get people in and
the technology stuff
and the technology aspect of it? And technology is a huge help right now. Huge.
What do we need to do to like help you guys out? Like plug your stuff. You got a few minutes. Plug us. Where do we find your beer? Where can we buy your merchandise? All of that stuff. Tell us.
If you go to phoenixbrewing.com/beer2go, you can order beer online. It's only available in Ohio, and we don't deliver beyond a 20-mile radius. But I'll mail any sweatshirt, T-shirt, hat, or any item like that. I'll put that anywhere you want me to send it.
That hat is really sweet. Yes. Where do we get the drink beer here hat? Drink beer made here.
Okay, I do have to. If I'm going to plug anybody, I need to plug a couple of things. Number one, the Ohio Craft Brewers Association. Yeah. I don't know if you guys know about the OCBA. They are fantastic. They are amazing. They have been champions for every single brewery in Ohio since the beginning of COVID and before. And I can't say enough nice things about them.
We have a great guild here in Ohio, for sure.
Mary McDonald and Justin Heminger have really worked their tails off to keep breweries afloat in Ohio and giving us opportunities and keeping us, you know, just abreast of what we have to do and what we should be doing. And then I would also say, you know,
the best experience is to visit us if you can.
Yeah, if you're local, come visit us.
We're on Route 30 and I-71. We're on the way to just about anywhere. We have a prison. We have prison tours in town.
Hell yes.
The Shawshank movie was filmed here.
I knew that's yes.
Prison.
The prison tours are the Shawshank, which is the Ohio State Reformatory, not the actual prison in town.
Okay.
Visit. Right.
Thank you for clarifying, Red, because I was pretty sure that what Duncan meant was that they were just parading people past real convicts for money.
This is where they make license plates. We have a stand-up of Morgan Freeman. We have a stand-up of
Tim Robbins.
Timothy Robbins and Zandy Dufresne. Both of them are wearing masks and having signs that say, don't exit here. Not an exit. This is an exit. So
they have lots of signs every place.
So.
Well, I'm sorry you guys are not going to see football for the next few weeks, but
I'm okay with that.
My child is screaming. Duncan and Carmen, thank you so much for joining Jay and I. And,
thank you for having us.
Phoenix Brewing Company in Mansfield, Ohio. You two have been fantastic. Thank you to Laura Bruns for introducing us. And go out there.
Shout out to Factotum.
Yes, for sure. Be well, you two, and let us know if there's anything we can do to take care of you. I don't know what the hell we can do.
Absolutely.
All right, take care, everybody.
If you're listening in Ohio, visit Phoenix, guys.
Exactly. Bye, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you so much.
When they come to tea.